EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
Or 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
Was there anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
Or 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's American 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs that are?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
County dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. Hello everyone and welcome to the show, wherever in the world you are joining us from tonight. Tonight's guest is Philip from the UK, sharing his encounter and abduction experiences during the winter of 1989. But before we hear from Philip, I would like to say a big thank you to everyone that has become a patron to the show recently, whether it's on Patreon or on the Buy Me a Coffee app. So thank you everyone, it really helps to keep the show running. If you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles Podcast. You can also find a link in the description of this episode below. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show. Welcome to the show, Philip.
Hi, Nick. Thank you very much for having me. I'm very delighted to be on board. Thank you.
It's great having you join us today. Calling from the UK, the same as me?
Yes, that's right. From sunny Bedfordshire.
Well, at least we're not getting rain at the minute. That's the main thing.
No, yeah.
Now, Philip, your experiences that you're going to be sharing tonight started in 1989. Would you like to be kind enough to start there for our listeners, please?
Yes. Well, there was a number of things that occurred before that time, but it was the winter of 1989 when we had lived in the village of Master Mortain, which is roughly about 5 miles outside of Bedfordshire, where my world, as it's known, was shattered. And that was all due to some kind of interface with an abduction. People call an abduction alien abduction, and that changed everything. But I'll explain what happened. The story's been said so many times, but I remembered coming home from work, and at that point I didn't drive. I was 20. We're talking about 30 odd years ago now, and I can still remember it as clear as day. And we lived in a cul-de-sac in a corner in quite a big house. And as I come up the drive, it was dark. It would have been roughly around about the time it was 7:15. And where our house was, we had glass all to the front of the frosted glass doors, frosted glass windows to the front of the big porch. And when I went inside the house, I walked through to the hall and the frosted glass doors to the kitchen. There is a reason why I'm using the, bringing this out about the frosted glass doors. There's a point that I'm saying this. And I walked into the kitchen stroke diner. And downstairs, we also, my brother and I had a study stroke bedroom. It's a very big room that we used like as a bedroom stroke study, and it had a shower room next to it. So I'm going through the hall into the kitchen, and I'm leaning back against the sideboard with the door to the kitchen door open, and I'm looking out to the hall. And our dog is there, Benji, and my brother, My twin brother is standing in front of me, so he can't see into the hall, but he's facing me, and my sister is to my far left. And all of a sudden, I know we were just talking about, you know, the mundane things that people talk about when they finished work. You just want to, you know, settle. And all of a sudden, the atmosphere changed. The atmosphere became, the only way I can explain it is it was almost like electric. And the dog, our dog, Benji, reacted to this because he started to growl. And I found this sensation increasing. So it felt like the hairs on the back of my neck were standing on end. And then my brother did something very strange. As he was standing in front of me, he raised his head towards the ceiling as though he was staring directly at the ceiling. And he said, "There's going to be an earthquake or Grandma's going to die." Well, that was puzzling because, one, there was no earthquake. And secondly, our maternal grandmother was still very much alive at that point. And as he said that, shortly afterwards, the dog began to growl, and there was a light that I could see coming up from the driveway. It was almost like the light coming towards the window, so it was obviously coming up the driveway. And I thought my mum was coming home from work early. But the light started to get brighter, this white light. And as my brother is temporarily frozen in this strange state, and I'm looking ahead and the dog's starting to go wild, I'm shocked because I can see the glass to the door starting to bend backwards and forwards as though it's becoming putty. And as I'm watching this feeling of fear, incredulous feeling of trying to accept what you're looking at, but logically trying to, you know, reaffirm this is not possible, and yet it's happening. So as the glass is bending backwards and forwards as though it's becoming pliable, it's like one of those things you see on a cartoon. Immediately, there was a 3-foot small being. I say being because on observation, I can still see it. It was diminutive in size. It was completely black, and it wore what I thought was an oversized helmet on its head. It was entirely black, and it stepped through the glass and ran straight ahead, which led to mine and my brother's study stroke bedroom, and the glass immediately returned back to normal. So the dog is absolutely going crazy. My brother snaps out of his trance, or whatever you want to call it. I don't know what it was. And I'm so stunned by what I'd seen that I reached behind me to get a knife from the drawer, and I said, "There's an intruder in the house." And then I shouted, "There's an intruder in the house." And as soon as I said that, the whatever it was had come across from the corner of the downstairs hall, and it went up the stairs very quickly and disappeared. And we searched the house but couldn't find any sign of it at all. And that night I broke down because I'd never seen anything or experienced anything quite like that. I mean, I'd seen UFOs before, but nothing like that. And I broke down because I thought I was going mad. Incidentally, the dog passed not long afterwards of a brain tumor. We're not saying that it was part of what happened. We have no proof of that. But his behavior changed considerably after that experience. And it then, unfortunately, I suffered in the eyes of the media because many years later, when people got wind of the story, when I belonged to some UFO groups, television got involved, and I was so naive and thought, oh, I'd, you know, go and tell them my story, not realizing that I was being used as the butt end of jokes for the media circuit. And I've grown and come a long way from there since that time, because there was no one really to talk to. And it was only in my late 20s that I'd gone to join some UFO groups, one of them called Beams. So that very morning, I can't, and I don't have any accounting of time. It must have been the early hours of the morning, because I suddenly found myself on my back, hovering 3 feet off the ground, and in the hall where this thing had come through. And I awaken, realizing that I can't move and that I'm floating. And the shock of it is puzzling, because I'm like, well, I'm in this strange state. Am I having some sort of, you know, vivid dream, or, you know, sleep paralysis, as it's known? But as I'm thinking this, I'm finding myself being pulled through the kitchen glass doors. And as I'm going through them, I'm wondering, well, how am I able to get through the glass? That's impossible. This theme of the glass and things coming through it seems to be a constant theme. So I'm being pulled through the kitchen. I can see the dog asleep in the corner. I then am being pulled through to the other side of the kitchen door that leads to the conservatory. And I'm being pulled through to the conservatory, out into the garden where there was a patio and a pond, and it was a very long garden. And as I'm being pulled outside, I'm being moved into an upward standing position so I can see the sky above me, and it's dark. And I'm shocked by seeing a lot of UFOs. And I'm thinking, well, they're real. You know, the big question, here they are. They're all here. There's no big deal about it. What's the problem? And I see that there is a dark gray spherical object that is stationary, not moving, and the others are moving past. And as soon as I clock sight of that, I then feel myself being lifted up very quickly, moving at great speed. I can feel my stomach starting to churn, thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to hit it. And then I blank out. And there are two more parts to this that happened in sequence. And that's why I had a big hang up about people saying alien abductions or whatever. We still don't know. But I then woke up. This is the part that I suffered for considerably, because I woke up stunned, realizing that I'd just been taken from my home and then towards this object. And that I wake up and I find myself in a room that is very hot. It's very dim. It's very hot in this room, and I find that I'm not wearing any clothes. My night stuff is not on me, and I'm strapped to a bed. And so there is. I also find that there is the horror of finding myself turning to my right and seeing three what I consider to be reptilians, and this is where reality seems to be thrown right out the window. How on earth can there be reptilians? And I've never had any interest in them whatsoever or anything like that. But there they were. There were three of them. They're quite tall, powerful looking. They seemed to be in a kind of like a much more dense. There was fog. There was kind of like, you know, when you're in a steam room and there's like that foggy feel, you know, around like steam. But there was much more steam around them, and I could make them out, and it horrified me. But the horror turned to absolute horror, because I realized at that point that I felt like there was something inside of me. And I realized at that point that some kind of device or implement had been inserted into the lower part of the anatomy, and I could feel it within the bowel or the stomach. I'm not a doctor, you see, but it felt to the lower part. I could feel it. It felt organic within that area. And I knew that it was inserted because it felt like there was something down there, you know, like a tube. And that was it. I lost it. I wanted out. I couldn't move. And those three beings were just so cold. And I was just to them a slab of meat on a table. And I wanted out. And I was so horrified by the experience. It was, and this is what I suffered for, being honest and open and sounding like you've just, you know, watched something from a science fiction movie. The experience was very different. And when you're in a situation that is more real than you know is real, that's scary. So I'm screaming and I'm yelling. I want them to take it out of me. And then all of a sudden, there's a small gray, but it's more cream than gray, seems to appear to the front of, I can see ahead of me, but there's kind of like a partition. Like, you know, if you've got a room where there's like a wall that extends out a little bit further, but you can't see around the other side, you know what I mean? And then I saw this gray coming forward. It was small. It had large eyes, nothing really for a mouth or nose. Didn't really see if it had any ears. I didn't see any. And immediately as it appeared, I felt this thing retracting from the lower part. And I felt myself being released. And I looked, and those three other beings had gone. I don't know where they'd gone. I wasn't even bothered. I wanted out. So the gray commands me to dress, and it's cold. But I think, well, I got to get out of here. So I dress. I ordered to follow it ahead of where it had come from, which was a corridor. I assumed it was a corridor because I could see lights above the ceiling. And we come to what I thought was a wall. The gray looks at me and I'm like, well, what do we do now? I want out. And what I thought was a wall turns out to be a door. I don't even remember seeing it opening, or if it did, it was very quick. And I could see the village from a height. And this is the last part of the experience that's coming up now. So I can see the village from a height, and it's becoming dawn. But shockingly, I can see another disc-shaped object that's smaller, or it feels smaller, than the one I had seen, and if that was the one I'd entered, because we don't know what this is. And the grey looks at me and like it wants me out. And I'm like, you're joking me. You want me out? There is a sense of irony here. Yes, go, leave. You want me to jump? And I get upset because I don't deal with heights very well. The next thing I know is that I feel like I'm pushed, or there's a slight push, and I'm floating down towards the ground with two greys on either side of me. I don't know where they appeared from, but I was told not to look at them. And I'm thinking, well, why can't I look at them if I've seen one already? There's no point to that. But it feels like I'm not allowed to look behind. I can't look behind. So as I come down to the garden and where the conservatory is, there's one last shock because, I don't know, the others must have taken off or whatever. And there's another grey that I will never forget standing in front of me, and it is standing directly underneath this smaller object. I can't move. I'm still restrained, feeling violated and broken. And this grey is very smart. He was wearing a one-piece khaki uniform. He was wearing black knee-high boots. He wore on his head this type of pointed hat, but it wasn't like a wizard's hat. It looked quite, in conjunction with his attire, it looked quite smart. It seemed to fit in with what he was wearing. Anyway, he had his arms folded across his chest, and his face that came at a much more a point where the chin is, was angry. He had large black eyes, but his whole attitude was of complete anger. And I felt that. I felt like a kid that's being absconded by an adult. Remember when you were a kid and you were told off by a parent or teacher, your stomach would drop? Well, it was more than that. And then I became angry because I wanted to punch him. I thought, how dare you? You know, you're angry with me. You've put me through this, and I don't understand what this means. I have no understand what's going on. And I thought I needed to ask him something because he's still standing there looking at me with that horrid grimace, that face. And I'm like, well, if I ask him something, I'll have the answer. I know that this really happened. I need to ask him a question. So I said to him, how on earth am I able to get through solid doors? How on earth to get through, you know, solid matter, locked doors, that type of thing? And as soon as I said that, he looked shocked, as though I shouldn't ask a question, and his mouth turned into an O. And immediately, what he did was very strange and seemed to mimic what my brother had done. He turned his head up to the underneath of what I assumed was his craft. And as he spoke, it came out as an electronic rasping voice. It was all unintelligible. It reminded me of the voice synthesizer that we used to have for our first computer, the ZX81. And as soon as he started to rasp these unintelligible words, I saw myself seeing him frozen in that pose, like it's all garbled, going through the conservatory glass doors, through the kitchen glass doors, through the hall, through the bedroom, and banging my body. And immediately when I woke up, I had a nosebleed and I had to go and sort myself out in the bathroom. The next day, my brother tried to use a Polaroid Kodak camera because we found that there were three triangular marks, punctures behind my right ear. There were also three marks on my right arm. I had continuous nosebleeds for 2 years from the right nostril. And needless to say, it was a bit difficult to walk. What am I going to do? Go to the doctors and tell them that I've been probed by aliens? Yeah, sure. At that time, I didn't know who to turn to, who to talk to. So when my brother tried to take the pictures with the Polaroid camera of the amazing triangular marks behind the right ear, the development didn't come out. It did not come out. So I gave up with it. And I found recently, or I've had problems with my right ear, that I've been to the doctors on 3 occasions, and there was an incredible story behind that. So the whole theme of going through solid matter was something that kept bothering me, because people were talking about their abductions as though they were happening on a very physical level of reality, and yet mine was very different. Or was it? So there was another strange event that happened in 1996, where a part of the puzzle I seem to have been rewarded with regards to the phenomena, and that was something that then led me into a very serious level of investigations of what happened. I was not interested in my account, although people want to talk about it and bring it up. I understand that. I respect that. But at that point, I realized back then that confiding and talking to people about it also opened me up to those avenues of ridicule or probe by aliens and all this type of thing, you know, even where national television was concerned, not all of them, but some of them. And you learn, and you unfortunately have to toughen up, because a lot of people are so, you know, rigged into the physical reality, and this is what they believe is all that there is, and there's nothing more. Well, good luck to them. But, you know, when you've had an experience of that kind, of that magnitude, it kind of opens up a lot more questions and answers that have not yet been answered, as it were. But just lastly, I'll just point here, another researcher, Pierre Sabac, has, you know, very kindly been helping me out with certain things, as other researchers have as well. And he found that there was a correlation between the physical sighting of the small being and with what happened to my brother, who went into the trance state and said there's going to be an earthquake or grandma's going to die. And the other alien at the end, if I call it alien, I call it Noddy, although it's not like Noddy, the Enid Blyton's character creation. But if you see animated plastic move, that's frightening. He seemed to be mimicking what my brother was doing. So on different levels of reality, that's very interesting. So Pierre Sabac thinks that what happened was that when the small 3-foot black being entered the house that I saw that appeared physical, that somehow something had scrambled my brother, could well have scrambled my sister, because I didn't see what she was doing. It seemed as if, although I can't prove it, but it seemed as if they were knocked out. But that doesn't make me unique in any way, but I still can't work out why it happened to this day.
And have you had any experiences since then?
There may have been another one. Yes, certainly with UFOs, yes. And thank God the last one on the 9th of April 2016 at 11:15 was filmed by my niece. That's another story entirely. That was very bizarre. But there may have been another so-called abduction in the property that we live in now, although I have no memory of that. All I recalled was one morning, about 3 o'clock in the morning, well, night, morning, whichever way you want to see it, 3 o'clock in the morning, I woke to light and rumbling sound coming from above the house, very deep rumbling. I got up because my bladder was bursting. And when I went to, you know, sort myself out, my North American Indian t-shirt was back to front. And it's almost impossible to do, because with the t-shirt, the back is higher. So if you put it on the wrong way, you're not going to be able to, you're not very comfortable in it, you know? So there may have been, but I can't categorically prove that in any way, because I have no memory of that. And of course, I will only report things as they happen. People have tried to say, well, did this happen and that happen? And I'm saying, no, this or that didn't happen. I can only report what happened. But the 1989 event was the event that changed everything for me, but also rewarded me with kind of like new theoretical dynamics about the possible origins of the Greys, and what they may be after, why they're interested in human reproduction when they themselves cannot reproduce, coming across almost like a blank canvas and trying to fill in the parts that they have lost. So this is where my research led me in later years, and being joined by many esteemed minds within the UFO, fraternity, which I'm very grateful for. But it doesn't do you much favor, you see, when you say, well, you know, I'm a researcher, but I'm also an abductee. And I realized at that point that in the days of old, it didn't look very good if you were both of them. It was all right if you were one or the other. But as I said, I have nothing to hide. We're just after the truth. And that's what we're looking for. So we may be dealing with aspects of perhaps multidimensional realities of awareness, a larger exploration and understanding of consciousness. I think all these things have to be taken into account, whereas before we were trying to pigeonhole them into boxes and trying to make them squeeze and fit them in there, and they won't fit. And one of the other things we discovered was that the phenomena itself, although there appears to be a very physical level of interaction, there's also a very strong psychic interaction as well, you know, so that there's a component which seems to a link with the individual on a very personal level of the psyche. And this can change for even if there are a group of people who are observing the same thing, i.e. UFO, that they will report different things. So this is interesting speculation indeed when we're dealing with, you know, those types of those forms of investigation into the theoretical arena.
Join me, George Norrie, for the Worldwide Contact in the Desert Virtual UFO Conference, June 25th to June 28th. Contact in the Desert is an epic weekend of adventure jam-packed with exciting explorations into UFOs, ancient civilizations, AI, crop circles, forbidden archaeology, disclosure, and the newest evidence of ongoing contact, sightings, and leading-edge science. This amazing weekend delivers more than 130 presentations and special events showcasing 67 speakers from all over the world, with 2 extra weeks to view your favorite leading experts, including Avi Loeb with Clyde Lewis, Linda Moulton Howe, Paul Hellyer, John Lear, Russell Targ, David Childress, Doc Wallach, and more. With breaking articles in the New York Times and acknowledged naval sightings, and more importantly, the new release of classified documents on the day of the soft opening of Contact in the Desert, we are your source for inside information. Join us June 25th at contactinthedesert.com to get your tickets today. Make contact, contactinthedesert.com.
What do you think the Greys have an interest in humans?
Well, in order to answer that question, we have to ask what we are. You know, we're chasing shadows. We're chasing ghosts, as it were. But I think it's interesting when we try to consider what we are. People believe that we're just flesh and blood beings with a sell by date, and once we die, consciousness is nullified. No more you. The end. Finito. The Greys appear to be interested in us because of our ability to reproduce. And it's puzzling, isn't it, for a species that themselves cannot procreate. And this may answer a few questions about cloning, or the dangers at least of cloning, where perhaps the Greys have counseled themselves out through this process of replication, continuous replication. And we are talking in terms of the soul here, of consciousness, of the larger picture of the great beyond that most people tend to, again, put in different boxes. But I believe that there are connection links with many of the things that, you know, that we call mysteries, and we look at them in separate components, and that's where we feel safe by dealing with them. But we may discover that there may be more of connections between one and the other. So it would appear that, to my mind, the Greys are interested in reproduction for a reason. And they do indeed come across as like a blank canvas, as though they need us to fill in the spaces that they themselves have lost, i.e. emotions, love, compassion, color, taste, smell, all these things that make us what we are. And one person said to me once, they said, well, we're clones. And I said, well, of course we are. But we are separate from an identical clone. We have individuality. We have consciousness. We have awareness of self. The Greys appear to work as a one hive mind consciousness, remember. And maybe their ability in abducting certain people, taking through walls and doors, may also open up a lot of other questions about the near-death experience and what they go through. You know, two different components, but matched by the same frequency, because if you look at the near-death experience, a person is taking into a world that's more real than the one they left behind. They lose time, they can communicate with their loved ones or higher beings through telepathy. And indeed, the physical body is transformed or changed if it's been going through some kind of terminal illness or whatever. Once the person returns back to its body, maybe the energy signature of the soul, which has been corrupted within the physical, has now been recorrected. Now, if we take an abduction, you know, people again are taking into or through walls and doors. The creatures communicate via telepathy. There's a sense of timelessness. But in the case of the abduction, the memories are scrambled deliberately, as though recall is almost impossible. And only in my case, I recalled everything, which was very strange. But in most cases, people have a hard time trying to put the pieces together. And when they come back, they find themselves with implants in most cases. So as I said, you know, we don't have the answers, but we have to, I think, look outside the sphere of the physical nature of reality, because these beings may have found a way of gaining access to our world that would completely shock us, you know. So that's the way I see that.
Your twin brother, is he experienced and was it connected to yours?
Yes, he had an experience age 13, but that was in Luton. That was a very different experience from mine, and the only one that he can recall, because he recalls the doctors, as they were, very heavily clad people that he couldn't see their faces, but they were doctors. But, you know, we both recall the events very clearly, but they were on completely different timelines, completely different areas, and completely different situations, which is interesting, isn't it? Because most people say, well, you know, it's got to fit the bill. It's got to be the same as your one. No, why does it? I think, you know, when we look at the abduction phenomena, we can kind of like put pieces together through patterns or things that occur, but the experience itself is very different within the nature of its reality, of its unfolding reality, that is. But yes, he had gone through an experience, yeah.
That's right, because people's experiences do certainly range, you know, a very wide spectrum, and it can be very subjective.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, there's elements of the mind, of consciousness, that we have rarely explored, you know, and I'm not saying that the greys aren't real. Of course they're real, but we may be finding that we are looking at this on too deep a level of containing it within the physical. Remember, consciousness is not physical. I always liken it to your mobile phone. You've got the hardware and you've got the software that you can't see that's directed into the hardware. And the hardware is designed to break the signal down into a language that you can understand, information that you can understand. And of course, the phone is a receiver and a transmitter, the same as the human brain. It works in the same way. You know, people think, oh, this is me, I'm in here, I'm locked right in here, this is me. Well, no, because science is beginning to understand that we are energy, and that consciousness appears to work independently of its physical host. And that's been proven through such experiments and classified projects as remote viewing, clairvoyance, you know, healing, all these things that have been subjugated within our world as untruthful or not real. So I believe that a lot of people are now beginning to wake up to the fact that there is much more to our reality than what we've been led to believe. And we could also be looking at some form of rebellion from consciousness itself. Maybe it's just given up the ghost of being told what to do. And it's like, no, look, this is what you are. This is what this is, you know, and it's forcing its way through to us on this level. Because everything created through the mind eventually can become manifest to certain degrees and certain levels. So, as I said, you know, are we dealing with people from the future? It's possible. Are we dealing with beings from another planet? Again, it's possible. Interdimensional beings? Possible. Demonic entities? Possible. And the list goes on. As I said, I've never cornered myself and said, this is what it is. I've always been open to all forms of speculation, because we just don't know. All we have are theoretical ideas, as it were, you know, the theoretical models to work along. That's all that we have. So, but the experience is real, absolutely real, and it changes you as the individual when you've had the experience. It's incredible. And I don't know, I think maybe, has it changed me? Yes, it has. And I think in a world that is so negative and so destructive and so controlled mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, there's a part of you when you've had these experiences that changes you. And, you know, it's something that is good. So although what I considered was a very negative experience has changed me. Kathleen Marden, brilliant author and researcher, the niece of Betty and Barney Hill, she agrees, because we go through these transformations, you know, we change. And as I said, I believe that there's a lot more beyond this point that we call life. Our journey doesn't stop here.
That's right. You can certainly draw from a negative experience, can you? You know, you learn a lot, opens you up.
We survived the journey.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's all about learning, isn't it?
Well, we live and we learn. And although sometimes there is an element of doubt that we go through, you know, everyone, if they don't, then they're lying. is this real? You know, did I experience this? Yes, I did. Will I change it? No, I won't. Can I explain it? I can't. But what's wonderful is that we have wonderful researchers who, you know, come together and explore, you know, these experiences and formulate their own conclusions and their ideas of what may have possibly been happening. But we then find that we live in a system, unfortunately, which is designed to lie and cover facts or use so-called the word conspiracy, which basically just turns the finger of doubt upon the inquiring mind to make you look like you're a loony. But you see, the system that we serve needs that conspiracy. It needs it to cover its own conspiracy. So, you know, this is where the mess is now, because no one knows what's right and what's wrong, what's real and what's not. And, you know, this is an area which is very, that kind of like wavers in that balance. It's a very, very delicate situation. But, you know, as I said, I'm more interested now in the theoretical area of research with regards to the abduction and UFOs.
Because you are still very active, aren't you? You do lecture. You've been to the States, haven't you? You've done some talks over there.
Yes. I'm hopefully going again. I'm in June to Laughlin, and I have another Zoom conference in America, and then another one for the Out of Limits, which is created by Chris Evers and Philip Mantle, the wonderful Philip Mantle. You know, they've helped to, you know, they like what you do. Well, look, many other people, they like what you bring forward to the table on a theoretical level. And, you know, we may be wrong, but at the end of the day, you know, I'm fine with that. At least we're working towards new areas or science of the mind, consciousness, and also trying to get to the root of what this phenomena is, which is very fascinating. And I don't think it's an easy thing for many folk out there in the world to accept. They will reject it because people talk of disclosure, like, you know, oh yes, UFOs are real and aliens are real. Well, it's all very well stating that if that did come through an official capacity, but how then are you going to explain the process? How then are you going to, you've got a lot more to explain to the people that you're dealing with entities, or some of them, that can take you in from the dead of night, do these experiments on you, and put you back and scramble the memory, in most cases, scramble the memories. And that's going to be frightening. You just have to mention food shortage or fuel shortage, and it's like watching a documentary from Sir Richard Attenborough's program. You know, it's everyone goes ape. So I don't think, to be honest with you, it's as easy as, oh, let's have disclosure, tell us they're real. It's going to open up a barrage of other things that we won't probably be able to deal with on an empathic level.
No, I don't think it's going to be that simple.
No. If it is to happen, then it will have to happen in a pretty spectacular way. And, you know, and I think that it's going to have to force everyone to look up or to know something on a, you know, on a higher level. So I don't know. I have no idea. But I feel personally that disclosure is not going to come any time soon. I think we're still going to go around in circles for quite some time. And I think perhaps if disclosure is brought forward, it will probably be a long time after my passing, and certainly if we haven't destroyed ourselves in the interim. So
let's face it, I mean, they only tell you stuff that they want you to know. And if they do release anything like that, then it would be because there's something on the way, you know, and there's a reason behind it.
Yes, that's right. And I think and feel that at the end of the day, you know, I wanted to find out whether or not I was lying or the system was lying. And I think you probably know what side of the fence I sit on with that that example. So, you know, we are being lied to. And maybe is it for our own good? We don't know. Maybe there's more behind it that we're not to know. But, you know, when you've had an experience and the system says that it hasn't happened to you, you know, you're delusional or even worse, a liar, then you have to question it. You think, hang on just a minute. No, just a moment. You know, I'm allowed to ask questions, but I'm not getting any answers. None are coming back. And that's when you start to think, well, there's a problem. And then you find there's a really big problem. So, I mean, you know, we can only do as best that we can within these departments of inquiry.
It's a double-edged sword, isn't it? I mean, because keeping people in the dark for their own safety also makes people vulnerable.
Yes, Absolutely. But as I said, don't worry. We'll all get there. We'll find out in the end. I always say that to people. I say, don't worry. We'll all make it. We'll all get there.
Of course, for some people, it takes, you know, it's been certainly a long time coming.
Yes, it has. And, you know, what will this do? If, you know, what? Why are we going through this? Why am I so adamant, like many others, to find the truth? Well, it gives us hope of a greater reality, you see, and not just the manufactured one that we've been sold by a system that cares not about, you know, anything other than money and power and control. So it gives us hope in the understanding that there is much more to us and to the world that we're living on and to the greater question of creation without someone ramming it down your throat and saying, well, believe in this and believe in that. No, well, I think that has to be done on a personal level of integration, whether physically or psychically, consciously, whatever you want to call it. I think it's a personal thing. So I think what we're finding is that we are, you know, unfolding with our own reality, and most people are starting to wake up to the fact that they're tired of the old system because things could be very different. And that's the way I see it.
Exactly. Time for change. But I think it'd take a while for it to manifest in a positive way.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, as human race, we have to be honest here. And most people don't like people being honest. They like half-truths or lies. We are not a nice species. We're very destructive. We're very harmful, very hurtful to other people and also to the animal kingdom. So people raise their hands up and say, oh, no, that's terrible. How dare you? But it's the truth. Mm. And I've said this before. People don't want the truth. They're quite happy with their half truth or a lie. It's always like it all covers up the things they don't want to talk about. No, let's be honest. You know, I think we've got a long way to go as a species before we're able to evolve or start to treat one another with respect in the greatest of capacities. And I think this is the problem. There's so much diversity. And I think the system itself is tired of that and wants to create perhaps a one hive mind human consciousness where everyone knows what the other person is thinking and therefore nothing's a secret. And this is the danger, you see. You never know what the other person's thinking. The greys come across as a unit where they appear to be able to be in unison with one another's thoughts, you know, and maybe they yearn for that individuality. Well, good luck to them, because look what it's done to us down here. So I think that, you know, we've got a long way to go. And I don't think, to be honest with you, as long as we're human, that we'll ever find peace on this planet. I think there'll always be division or corruption or this type of thing.
Do you think that the aliens, when they abduct people, are they in cahoots with other humans?
I am not so sure. I've heard before about the greys working with military factions. I mean, there is a possibility that could be true. Or was there, you know, some kind of treaty? Again, we don't know. That could be true. And we just don't know. But I'm sure that the military factions, or perhaps a small percentage of them, are more aware of what's going on. And this is why we get all these spatterings of hearsay when a real event's occurred. It could be possible, but the only thing that I recall was that when I had that experience back in 1989, was that they were very much in charge. There were no humans in charge of that, whatever they were doing.
And you think that the reptilians were the main governing body, would you say?
I don't know. I have no idea. And, you know, I don't know. I can't answer that. And think of this, back in 1989. Oh, yes, you've been kidnapped by aliens on a spaceship. And, you know, you have these reptilians there with several greys, because there was two that came down with me and there was one standing waiting in the garden bar from the cream one that released me, or I felt had. How are you going to explain that to people? So I don't know. I've dealt more with the greys than I have with the reptilians, but I don't know where they stand. And I've had people also coming forward saying, oh, they've got it all worked out. You know, they've got this and they've got that. And I'm like, well, I don't know. And I'm still puzzled, Nick. I'm still puzzled because I don't know. Yeah. I have no idea what part they play with the equation. And people have said to me, well, it's because the greys are subservient to the reptilians. Well, that might be the case, but that never came across to me at all. Fear was the one thing that I had, because I wanted to get out of there. I wanted out. And they were totally overpoweringly inept of emotion. I just felt no empathy, no kindness, no nothing. I was just a piece of meat. So I don't know. I can't answer that question.
And I think people should always be aware that people say that they know they've got it all worked out. They've got it all sussed.
Well, good luck to them, because I'm still in the dark. And don't get me wrong, I was credited very, very generously with a theoretical puzzle to this, or part that I tried to put together with regards to the cloning issue and the consciousness and what could happen if we counseled ourselves out through a cloning program. I'm not talking about organs here. I'm talking about whole life forms. But we still don't know. We have no idea. And that's the interesting thing, because on each level of investigation, it becomes more puzzling. But what's interesting is that we know that the phenomena is real. And as I said before, it seems to integrate on a very personal level of the human psyche. Like a near-death experience, the experience changes the individual totally. So that is interesting.
Now, you're also an author. You've written quite a few books.
Oh, yes. I've attempted that. I can only but apologize. My latest one is the one that's called You, the Public Deceived, The Grand UFO Deception. And I'm no relation to Philip Glass, the debunker. That's just dealing with the phenomena in a slightly different way.
Have you got a website?
No, not at the moment. I did have one, but I'm working on a new one. So I want to do it so it's kind of like psychic and UFOs, although most people like the two parts to be separated. I understand that. But no, not at the moment.
Well, what we'll do is in the show notes, we'll put links to your books.
Oh, that's very kind.
Because I do have one on order. To the listeners, if you're interested, then, head to the show notes and click the link to Philip's books. And you also have is it a radio show or a podcast?
It's a podcast. Well, they call it radio show. It's called Twin Souls, and it's part of the Paranormal UK Radio Network. We have an author or an experienced or an abductee or, whoever on once a month. And then they, it's really great to meet and talk to a lot of people to hear their views and see what's been going on with them. So I think that's very interesting.
Great stuff, Philip.
Thank you very much indeed. And I'm very honored to be able to come on your show, Nick. It's been great.
Really appreciate you coming on, Philip. That's wonderful.
Thank you, Nick. God bless. Thank you.
That is all for this week. Keep updated and connected with me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you had an encounter that you'd like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com or via the contact page on my website, ufochroniclespodcast.com. A special thank you to Philip for sharing tonight, and thank you for listening. I will be back next Sunday. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye. Thank you.